This is Todd Yeoman again, Dr. Yeoman, on the 6th, 8th, 110 North Main Street. And here I'm speaking with, what's your full name, sir?
Grady Cross.
Grady. Mr. Grady Cross. Mr. Cross, we're going to talk to you today about the city of Dayton, the history of the city of Dayton. And I'm going to ask you some questions about your memories of it and also most particularly the arcade. But first, I'd like to ask you a few questions. You said a moment ago that you were born in Dayton?
Miami Valley Hospital.
Are your parents, were they Daytonites?
No, we are all of them from Alabama.
When did your parents move here?
When I was born.
What year was that, sir?
1942.
Did your parents move here to work in the factories during the war?
No. They came here in 1942 simply because my mother was 13 and it was an embarrassment to the family. And we left the rest of the family, they left the rest of the family and brought her here to have a baby.
Okay, and were your mother and father married later or
no.
During that time?
No.
Okay, so you grew up in what part of the city?
West Side.
West Side. What neighborhood particularly?
Fifth, Bragg, Mound, Norwood.
Were these communities largely people of color, African American?
All of them was color. The rest of them, they moved out as we moved in, so we had the whole area.
Do you remember this the migration of people away from the community after you moved in there?
Yeah, I experienced it. I watched them. They moved from the West Side to Westwood, from Westwood to Residence Park.
And what's your earliest memories of, I guess earliest memories altogether?
About what, Dayton?
Your life.
When I was 6, I can start there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what you want to know?
Oh, tell me anything you want about when you were 6.
When I was 6, we lived at 518 Mound, and I went to Garfield School, grade school. Then I went from Garfield to Willard, and from Willard to Weaver. Those were the grade schools that I went to. But the West Side was full of what you call neighborhood schools, grade schools. We didn't have one high school. I was on Summit, they now call Pauline Dunbar. It was the name of the school with Dunbar. That's the only high school we had. And then they started sending us to Roosevelt High School. And when we got to be in the majority in Roosevelt High School, they closed it down.
Well, they closed it down
when it became majority black and we started taking all the contests, sports, everything. We could beat everybody with Shaman High. And they closed it down, said it was inhabitable. Then they turned around the next year and put a police station, college stuff in there. They didn't want us to have it. It's the biggest high school in the city. And then we went on from there. They did a lot better part of the education. Did a lot better. We went over to Colonel White and stuff. Then we had the little racial tensions, black and white gangs. We was a lot of nonsense.
Did you do any of the sports when you were in school?
I played basketball, and I.
I
started playing for Roosevelt. I found out I liked it and I'm fairly decent. And then at that time, we didn't know, when I say we, I mean the blacks didn't know nothing about scholarships and stuff like that. So one day somebody informed me about them and said, if you do good, you can go to college, you can go to different colleges. But we didn't go nowhere, but Wilberforce and Central State. But anyway, I asked Coach Willis, I think, I forget his name, I asked him about the scholarship, and he said I had to go to the black high school, talk to the black coach to get a scholarship. So I told him, I was in 11th grade, I told him, I got to go to Dunbar to get a scholarship, and I'm going to go play for Roosevelt. I wasn't going to play for it. I'll go play for Dunbar. And he told me if I left school to go into, I would not play no more basketball. So I left school and went to play for Mr. Allawini at Lennon Center. And I played that, and we won all kinds of classes. That was a center for recreational things and helped them. A lot of the kids down there where we live that stay out of jail, and some of them went on to college. He taught us everything from swimming to boxing to chess, checkers, horseshoes. We did it all down there, and they closed it.
When did they close it?
I don't even remember, but I remember I was mad because they closed it down, and that center did more for blacks than any organization in the city. In the city. You know, and then they closed the Y. I don't know. And then they tore down our history. You know, the Classic was the first black theater, had a ballroom and everything. They tore it down when they put that bull jab over there.
When they put the what in?
They got some little social things they got over there now. I don't know what it is. They shut that whole area down. They tore the Classic down. And
was that over there on the over there by where 75 is now? Is that where you're?
That's what it is. They tore all that down, put that up there. They tore my mother's name house down and put that up there.
So
they paid them good this time though.
So they did the demolition of that area on the western side around 1957 and 1964. Do you think
no
it was in there?
I don't know no dates. I know when they put, if you know when the highway went through, then you know the date.
Yeah.
And they come through there and they bought up all the land, the people that, and they put the highway through there. Then they went on up further and they put it up there off Third and just cut the west side up.
I want to talk to you about that now rather than going on to the arcade. I want to ask you about that. What was the experience like for the people over there to have that land taken and cut up like that with the highway put in?
Well, the first group was Mr. Backus and who's that other guy? And they took it on there and they cut it. They took that. But after Backus got on TV and talked about him like a dog and they couldn't hide it, they when they come back, they got my mother's and other people's property. They paid them well. My mother had a three-bedroom shotgun house, you know, straight through. Mm-hmm. And they gave her like $50,000 or $60,000 for it. It wasn't worth it. I didn't pay but $18,000 for it.
What street was that?
Sprague Street.
Is Sprague still there, or did they get rid of that?
That's the highway. Oh. They got rid of Sprague Bank and Sunshine Quarter, some whatever quarter, right there at that corner. When you come across the bridge, it used to be a street called Bank, and then they had a street, Sprague. Then they got rid of any one of them. Well, Sprague. I think, you know what, I just thought about something. Sprague there's some churches over there. That church is still there. And RTA got it.
Do you remember the street number for your grandmother's on Sprague?
My family?
Your family.
I forget what they were. I know we lived at 117 Norwood, 518 Mound, and I forget that. It was a small number, 35, something like that.
Okay.
It's right there between, you know, Third and that was there, and then we moved on up from there. That's where we started, because we started there, set, and then we was going up toward Westwood, and that's the migration was going on then.
The migration, you mean, of
the whites were white moving out as the blacks moved in.
Could you say that one more time for me?
The whites were moving out as the blacks moved in.
So that would have been like, that would have been 60s. 50s?
50s.
50s. So you grew up at this time. You were, and how about the other people in the community? I as I mentioned before, how did that, did people feel about that? Did they understand that why it was happening? Of course, they understood why it was happening, but was it expected and accepted?
In that time, that day and time, we all knew what was going to happen. And then my people, they always moved in where the Caucasians were. That's where the better everything. They got groceries, they got drugstores, they got cleaners, they got bars and grills and restaurants. It was full of restaurants and things. And then we come in and we took it over. You know, they sold to us. And then after a while, they just start selling a $20,000 house for $40,000 to the back. And then it went on and on and on and on and on and on.
So the many African Americans, when they moved into those communities, they effectively were being charged really high rates for the houses.
If you bought, but the thing of it is, we had a gentleman here called Dude Rubenstein, and he helped a lot. He bought property and you paid through the store. He bought, he'll get businesses open for us and everything. That's what was going on when the riots came through, and we were doing great when the riots came through.
Do you mean the riot of 1966?
Yeah, we were doing great then. It was orchestrated.
So who is this man again who helped
Rubenstein,
you?
Dude, we called him Dude Rubenstein. He had Mike Greenberg. We had Joe Levy. We had Jensen, Mr. Jensen. These were all Jews, and they all catered to us.
They helped lead the way to buying properties, and then
if we worked, the dude would buy a property and sell it to us. And we paid instead of going through, which we couldn't hardly get no financing and stuff. You got to be one of them great jobs. They hadn't started the factories over here yet, and he helped a common man, bricklayer, whatever. A full-time job, janitor, working at Biltmore Hotel, all that. He helped us get property. He helped us do things. He had a clothing store, furniture store. Anything we needed, we could get there. If we couldn't get it there, Mr. Imhoff had the furniture. We could get stuff that we couldn't ordinarily get, because if you from the West Side, you couldn't go downtown and get no credit, no loans, or nothing like that. Not all of us now, I'm just saying. The regular people couldn't, you know, people that work for certain people, you know. And then they gave us jobs. Joe Levy got the clothing store, and he always hired the blacks from the high schools to work his store. They gave us a chance that we'd never had before.
Do you think that was because they were against the discrimination that African Americans experienced here?
I don't know what their reason was. All I know is they helped. They didn't lean on us. They didn't play us. They didn't work us and give us less. Everything was faced by us. It would be anybody else. So their reason was they were good people.
At that time, what were the majority of jobs available to many of the people in the neighborhoods?
I don't know the name of the bus company, but back then, but they were poor. Everybody was mostly your mama, your grandmama, and some of your dads and uncles. They was working for the people in Oakwood and Kettering.
As domestics?
That's exactly what it was. The buses was full, $5 a day in car fare.
$5 a day
and a decent job back then would be called working down the street here at Biltmore Hotel. And they had a lot of us, and they paid regular rates, you know.
Did people work for NCR or any of the GM plants?
Yeah, but at that day, NCR. I remember NCR when I was 9, and NCR helped us a great deal, and they gave some of us good employment, and then plus they had a show for us every weekend. They had events for us. They gave us the movies every Saturday. They were real good people. Whoever owned it.
What about the movies on Saturday? Where was that?
They had a movie for us every Saturday, and we all go over to the kids, and they would give us movies, and they give us candy and stuff after the movies. And on Christmas, they gave us every child in there a silver dollar. And see, oh, it was great for us.
That was at the location of the factory over there?
It was at the auditorium. And then they moved.
Did many of the people I've spoken to talk about working in the GM plants?
They, I don't know the year, but all of a sudden, they started hiring Afro-Americans, as y'all call them. And next thing you know, they gonna need everybody over there. But we had foundries that they could work at. They had GH&R, we had Dayton Steel, we had Malibu, we had Mercer Foundry, we had foundries in Dayton Town Rubber. They had decent jobs around here for us.
So, okay, let me now switch and get us closer to the arcade. But first, before we get right on that, tell me a little bit about what it was like to be downtown, to be just generally, and then to be African-American in downtown in the 50s, 60s, in the 70s.
Downtown Dayton was off limits. Downtown Dayton was before, I only talk about before Mr., what's his name?
Arthur Bierman?
Yeah, they had the home store, they had Mets, they had Wright's, Metropolitan, Donna Fields, all these stores around down here.
You weren't allowed to go into those stores?
Well, you can go in there, but you can't get no, if you ain't got cash, then nobody had no jobs. You work in there, we worked in there, and come down here downtown, then half the restaurants didn't want us in there. Only restaurant downtown that didn't give a dang and didn't treat you like dirt was Frisch's.
So, when you would go in, how did they weren't officially segregated, but how did they?
Because if you go in the store, Kresge's, McCrory's, Woolworth's downtown, we had one over there on Third Street, it was all right. Everything was to go.
They wouldn't seat you.
And then after that, then we started having problems with them. And then, you know, Kresge's, they killed a couple of, I think his name was Kresge's. They killed a couple of guys from over there, and they was beating them. The security was beating up blacks in there for little or nothing. They killed Mr. Bean, and they moved, and became Kmart.
What year was that, do you think?
I don't know years. I don't have an idea about years. I am a very busy black man. I can remember the bad. I remember the good. So what you want to know about it, I can tell you what I've seen and I've been. I know that we came downtown rarely. We got dressed to come downtown to pay the Dayton Par and Light. And finally, when we did get down here, it wasn't nothing down here.
By the time African Americans were welcome,
it wasn't done here. Ain't done here now.
Okay, so that brings us then to the arcade.
The arcade been there. We've seen it. First, we only went in there because that was the biggest establishment downtown that we could eat. Sit down and eat.
Culp's?
Yes.
Culp's.
I know what I'm saying. Yeah. And then after that, they let us all the way in. I mean, it wasn't no long time after we found it. And after we got on it, the people that ran the arcade, then the last owner I know was B.G. Daniels. They was very fair. So that's where we started going.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, they had food and everything. Then what really made it great, they had the part over here on Third Street that was with showrooms, you know, displays, stores, and they put our stuff in there. Harvey's, the shoe store thing. I've been going to that store for 90 years. I forget the name of the store. But anyway, they had the shoe store there. Then they got this hallway coming off third where they got that giant man out there. Now, it's a hallway going out, and they got shops on both sides. And it was just as many black shops as it was Caucasians.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so when you were going there, you were probably in your teens or 20s when you first started going there?
Arcade?
Yeah.
I started going to arcade. I was in my late teens because I worked at that, I had an uncle work down there where the Cubs were right there by the guard. He had us come in on weekends and clean up. I never did go in then. But then I started going in, and then I started going to Cubs, and then they said, I got a job over here at the luggage place, and I started going over there and getting the sandwiches and the fish. I mean, they didn't give a damn.
Okay.
You was a good customer and you had the money, or you was green or orange, you was treated like you was a customer at the arcade.
So
Frisch's too.
At Frisch's too.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing that's probably around 1962, 63, based on your...
It was before that. It was 42, 52. Yeah, early 60s.
Okay.
And the late 50s.
Yeah, really before, and an aside here while we're on this topic, tell me about your memories of the civil rights movement and its impact here in the city of Dayton.
You sure?
Yes, please.
I have no understanding. I'm 77. I had 3 kids when that was happening. I have no understanding why it happened, so I really can't speak on it.
Okay.
There was nothing here going on in Dayton that we needed them people from New York and around coming in here on TWA, first class, going to our meetings, talking about burning this mother down, what they don't allow there. We had everything. They had General Motors working us. Tate Manufacturing was working us. Mink Dayton was working us. GH&R was working us. Mercer Foundry was working us. I'm naming only the jobs that paid good money. I ain't talking about the other jobs we had scattered around.
Right.
Why they burned and rioted here, I have no idea. And I hate to hear it. I hate to talk about it. I get bitter because we had... From Third Street Bridge going west, when you cross over what they call the Freedom Bridge, I don't know why they called it that, because we wasn't allowed on it during the riot.
Okay.
We couldn't cross no bridges. They fenced the whole west side in and let them fools tear it up.
So, when you're talking about this, are you referring to the rioters in the 1966 riot, or... But how about the NAACP and people like that?
What about them? They ain't did nothing. Wasn't nothing to do. We had bank. We had drugstore, pharmacies. We had barbershop, beauty parlors, clothing stores, food store, everything. We didn't need them.
So,
and then... H.R.A.P. Brown and his crew come in here on a plane and went up to Wesley Center to show us a picture of a black man hanging that none of us blacks knew and a white man hanging him that none of the whites knew and start a riot.
So you're thinking of the... That's not the race riot, though, of 66, is what...
How many race riots you think? I lived here for 70 years. Now, what you talking about?
Yeah, okay. All right, so other events is what...
I'm talking about the riots of Dayton. A black man got killed on the porch on Phil. They thought the two white guys, a white guy and a white girl, did it. When they let the white guy and the white girl go, They came because they didn't know no better. They came right back across the bridge and was going wherever they was going. And then somebody saw them, and they, here we go. That's the first.
Okay.
Now, you got years, I don't got years. The first, and we did a little damage then. Over. The next one coming on, was you here?
Oh, I was just born at that time.
Huh?
I didn't live here. I'm not from around here.
Okay. I got the same answer you do. What your answer is, you don't know what happened, right?
Yes. The
except what you read. Well, my thing is, I was about to get.
Okay. Hold on one moment. We got to pause here. There we go. Sorry.
The riot
of 66, the that took place with the white carload of white men shot. I can't remember his name, and
it never happened.
Oh, tell me about that then.
A man got shot on the porch. They blamed it on a couple of white cats or girls or whatever. They arrested them. Everybody went downtown. They didn't have no gun, no nothing. There was just some, like I did when I was young, I used to get in the car and go through the white neighborhood and see what was going on. That's all they were doing. That started the first one.
Okay.
The next one, what you call next one,
yeah.
What you asked me about, was started by people, SNCC, and all them other suckers coming in here meddling. And there was no carload of whites to go down Fifth Street. I was out there every night. This is 3 a.m. in the morning. What's the brother doing out on the porch at 3 a.m. sweeping? That was bull. And then when they got through with that, got you stirred up, here come that other stuff. You could tell me, but I don't even know where you started that other one. I mean, when we was burning up Fifth Street, when we was burning up the neighborhood, is this odd to me that Dayton is full of ghettos, soda baths, Joy apartments? That's why I'm bitter. See, people don't understand this. There was never a riot in a ghetto. All riots was in places in Florida, California, Ohio, where Negroes was doing great. You see the riots, they're tearing down store windows and taking our clothes and running our TV. They wasn't over in the ghetto where we could barely get a bowl of beans. Pole, kids sitting out in the yard playing in mud. That wasn't no, that. What they rioted in was the where the blacks were doing better. Well, from Third Street Bridge going west, you didn't know if you was leaving downtown Dayton or not. Going east, you don't know when you got to downtown Dayton, because Third Street had everything. We had everything. I mean, everything. I ain't nicknaming, I ain't calling no names. I'm saying it like I meant it. Everything. And that's where the ride was. Mm. The people that was helping us, that's where they rided at. Because they didn't have sense not to think for themselves. How you gonna stand on a plane and tell me they holding you down, that white man got his spit on your thumb, he won't let you gonna do nothing. When everything he had over on the other side of the bridge, we had on our side. And that was instigated by some of them Peter Babbitt motherfuckers, excuse me. I just don't like talking about it. I don't see what we ride. We didn't have nothing. And then after the ride, we ain't got nothing. That was the point.
So you said that to shift it back to the arcade. You said that the arcade was a pretty good place for African Americans to go to. And
arcade was good for everybody. They hard, what you do. They hard you if you could do the work. They paid you for what you did. If you could afford a shop, they let you shop. They wasn't no you none of that crazy stuff. They had doors on the first floor. Going in the door off of Third Street, and they had just as many black shop owners as they did with Caucasian. It was a great place.
Did you work there?
I worked in the basement over there by a corpse where we go, where the shipping and the trash, you know, all them people. I did that. I wasn't on the payroll. I was a little guy. Just got hustled.
So, the business you're in now, the...
I shine shoes. I've been shining shoes since I was 12. I don't have a good job other than that, but I always come back. Sometimes I work the job and shine shoes.
And you didn't do the at the arcade, though?
No.
They didn't have no shine stands in the arcade. They didn't have no barbershop.
So when, in your memory, this sounds like the arcade was a great place, but it started to have trouble in the, I would guess, in the late 60s, early 70s. What's your sense about that, about the decline of the downtown, perhaps if it's connected to that, or just the arcade in general?
I got to go. I'm going to answer this. I got to go. Let me explain this to you. How old are you?
54.
Even at 54, I am 23 years old than you. I'm going to ask you a question. Have you ever been in a segregated city? Listen to what I'm saying. I ain't through.
Okay.
A segregated city and it get integrated. And what's the first thing happen? I mean, you go on the radio, you go on these skirts. What's the first thing happen? In a school, in a city, in a neighborhood, what's the first thing happen? The people that built that shit leave. And that's what happened downtown Dayton. NCR left, Rice closed, Elden John, ain't nothing down here.
So you think that it was the end of the not end, but because Dayton is a terribly segregated city today, but the integration, more integration brought up.
Where do you think the malls come from? When we got downtown Dayton, all of a sudden malls start popping up because we couldn't get out there. Did you see lately here when they were trying to stop RTA from putting a stop out by the mall? They don't want us out there.
I remember there's a case about the arcade that the people in the 1980s they wanted to make the arcade a private place so that they could exclude people, and there was a bus stop out in front of the arcade.
And on Third Street.
Yes.
Yeah, they moved it.
And do you think that that was again racially motivated?
Life is racially motivated.
Got it.
Okay. You got people here in this city all over. Nobody wants to be themselves. They want to imitate the others. I mean, right now it's going both ways. And that's what the problem is. Some of the southern white men tell blacks, well, I stay in your place. They take it as insult. But me as a black man shining shoes, what I look like out there at the opera?
No, I look pretty good.
I mean, I said, you said 4 o'clock, look at the time.
I know, I was...
You got, now she can tell you, we was raised up together.
And I'm sorry, so who are you, ma'am?
Mm-hmm. When they say field trip, we went to the ballet, we went to Memorial Hall to listen to classical, so I listen to classical now. You know, we went ice skating. I went to Grace A. Green grade school.
I forgot about that school.
Yes, so.
Hey, are you were you born in Dayton as well?
Yes, I was born in Dayton.
And, did your parents, had they lived here all their lives? Or
my mother was born and raised in Xenia, and then they moved to Dayton. My dad, Paducah, Kentucky. And my dad was a deputy sheriff, and he owned his own business. He was a contractor. He built homes out in Kettering. So, and I do speak differently than other people. If you notice, I enunciate, and I say Dayton. I don't say Dayton. I say Dayton. So that's the way I was brought up.
Grady was telling me about the arcade. Do you have memories of the arcade?
Oh, my gosh. I used to say as a little girl, when I grow up, I'm going to live up there in one of those apartments. They were gorgeous.
Okay, please tell me about the apartments, because we've met very few people who can tell us anything about the apartments.
Well, I've never been in one, but just to see, you knew people lived there on the upper level, and there was a little balcony. It was gorgeous. The tile, it was gorgeous.
Do you know, our understanding is that a lot of the people who lived there were like single people, like younger people who worked in a downtown.
You know what? I wouldn't know. We didn't. My mother did not allow us up there. You know, those were people's homes. So we came through the arcade, which we loved. Places to eat. You know, it was, you could get to a lot of the stores. The department stores, Thaw's, Donenfeld's, you can come through the arcade and go through McCroy's or whatever and end up out there on, what is that, 3rd, you know, in Maine, yes.
And how old were you when these memories you have of going into the department stores and walking through the arcade, how old were you and what year would that have been?
I was probably about 3 or 4. I can remember way back.
So
72 now.
You're 72?
Yes.
Okay. So can't do the math. That would have been
in the 50s.
In the 50s.
Right.
And Mr. Grady told me that that the arcade was a very welcoming place for African Americans.
It was. You know, I didn't know that people didn't like you because of the color of your skin until I was in high school. Everybody welcomed us. Like I said, my dad was a contractor. He built homes out in Kettering, and we played with the children. We'd go with him out there as he would go inspect what his workers did, and we played. I didn't know people didn't like you because of the color of your skin. You know, it was amazing to me.
The restaurants in the 50s then, and I guess you continued to maybe go there in the 60s and 70s, at the arcade, the restaurants were welcoming.
Yes, they were. Smalley's Pretzels, I love that. I still go over here off Wayne at, what is that, whatever. Xenia Avenue off over there and buy pretzels. They used to cost $2 for a quarter. Now you could probably get a little piece about 2 inches for.
And do you remember some of the festival things at the arcade, like Christmas?
Oh, Christmas at the arcade. Basically, I remember Christmas at the department stores. I remember Elders, then there was Beerman's, and there was Reich's, you know, the different department stores, and they would set, especially Reich's, the windows up, because Dad would let us walk around and look. Like I said, you know, I grew up in Dayton. I didn't know people didn't like people because of the color of their skin. I'd never been down south until I was an adult.
Did you grow up on the west side?
Yes.
Whereabouts over there?
Over behind Home Avenue on Elwood.
Okay. There's so many things I want to talk to you guys about, but did you know any people who worked at the arcade?
No, I didn't. I didn't know anyone that worked there. My mom and dad might have, but we were We were brought up in an era where children kept to children's place. You know, if I had seen one of my parents' friends, I could say hello. But we didn't converse with strangers.
Or we didn't get into, like these kids do today, you know, we, mama spoke, daddy spoke, any adult in the area spoke, we.
That's right, we weren't, were brought up properly. Yeah. How can I say that? Children now have no respect.
They talk
back to
their parents.
But that's children raising children.
Yeah.
We were raised by adults.
For
and
real.
When our parents had company, we didn't sit in the room and listen to adult conversation. It wasn't for us. And we didn't have to be told. We just knew that we weren't supposed to be there. They weren't talking to us, you know.
Mr. Grady, before we end, I know you want to go here, but can you briefly tell me a little bit about, do you have memory? This is on a different project, the one about the arena. And what I'm interested in is you talked about your wanting to play basketball and things. What was your sense of University of Dayton, the significance of that base basketball for the city of Dayton or for the black community or anything?
What University of Dayton got to do with athletes, the athletic part of our people? They were doing a school thing. They built a place over there, but before they built it over there, we called it Welcome Stadium, didn't we?
Right.
And we went over there to play ball, and not in no gym. We learned to drive over there. We played a little outdoor football and all that, so.
In the fields over there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was where the schools played.
The high school, it had a
that was what it was.
Field.
Right, so the Welcome Stadium was built in 1948.
It was there when I got there.
That's
yeah.
right, that's all
okay.
I can say.
Okay.
So UD, as far as a male, I like basketball, but when I was coming up, I didn't know nothing about Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I like UD because they recruited in the area, and they had a lot of Caucasians. They had a lot of Afro-Americans that went to UD.
And you know, UD was Catholic, so there were a lot of black Catholics, you
yeah.
know, and they went. Like I said, I didn't know about prejudice.
And when I met prejudice, I didn't know it. I seen it on TV. Wouldn't know when it was a TV. We heard about it, seen it on the paper. In Dayton, we was kind of in a area. And property owners and store owners were white. And you didn't have none of that crazy stuff that you see in the news. And then you didn't run into that until high school.
That's when I learned prejudice.
That's
when
I learned prejudice.
My friends were Hungarian. We all went to grade school together. We spent the night at each other's homes, back and forth, had lunch over there. I get to high school and they tell my friends they can't sit with me in the cafeteria. So we started eating at the Teddy Bear or the Rose Bowl, where we could eat what we wanted to eat and sit where we wanted to sit.
What school was that, ma'am?
Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm. I went to Roosevelt before her, and when we got to Roosevelt, we didn't even take gym together.
The gym classes were segregated.
Yeah. We didn't take gym together. They had a double gym. I ain't never seen a bigger
right.
gym.
Right. Oh, they had, well, I don't know about that because my gym class consisted of everybody.
And we
had two swimming pools, an Olympic
right.
swimming pool.
That was
yeah.
after we come through there. And then they had
indoor track.
They had a downstairs swimming pool. They had all that, but we didn't get to use it as she did. But then when we went to Roosevelt.
You were about 4 years ahead of me.
We couldn't eat at the Teddy Bear. Or the Sugar Bowl. We ate it
for
we
could.
And when they got there,
I didn't know, like I said, I didn't know prejudice.
So you graduated maybe 62, 63?
No, that was my sister, 65.
You graduated 65, uh-huh. and then you would have
yeah,
been 60.
I was like, what's it, 64? 62. Okay. But what I'm saying is, when they got there, Dunbar High School had tore the teddy bear up, and that's how they started letting us in. Now the B&D was always had been everybody, and the Sugar Bowl was on the corner. That's where we got our Roosevelt things at. But when I went to Roosevelt, my principal, what was your principal?
I don't know.
My principal was Natalie Ross.
No, I didn't know Natalie Ross.
Well, Natalie Ross.
She went, they did Roth High School
after her. When we went to Roosevelt, Natalie Ross, Mr. Humboldt, and they tried to smooth it out with a black guy, wasn't that Cummings?
Mr. Cummings.
Natalie Ross was the principal. And every fifth word came out, our wife was the N-word.
See, I didn't know.
We didn't experience that. We went there. Roosevelt High School was so uppity, that was the only.
That's what they said, but I didn't.
They were the only high school that recruited like college. You're going to be a high in intellect or a good sportsman to get in Roosevelt if you was black.
Yeah, I don't know. My mother said I was reasonably intelligent. I stayed on the dean's list. My mother was a genius. He can tell you.
Yeah. So I know you guys are probably going somewhere, so I don't want to keep you. So I guess I have to be satisfied with that. Okay, great. I can ask you some more questions. Yeah. I'm going to have lots of questions to ask you. And ma'am, if you know anybody else that we can talk to about, we're doing, the specific reason I'm talking to Mr. Grady today is because of the arcade. We're writing a history of the arcade.
I liked how you could walk downstairs. That's where they had little restaurants and things down. It was, now, You hear how I speak. My mother and father, they were very elegant people. And we didn't go out to eat a lot. You know, my mother grew up on a farm and she cooked. Daddy cooked. And we ate at home. You know, if we went out, we went to family. Now, we might catch a hot dog or snow. I'm telling the story. We weren't even allowed to eat bologna or hot dogs. We weren't, because she grew up on a farm. She said she knew what they were made out of. But I used to love, oh my gosh, I'd get a coney and then be sick.
You mean a lot
of silver poles? That would be at the arcade?
Yeah, because we couldn't eat that.
Okay.
We didn't eat it at home. You know, when your body is not used to something, it kind of rejects it.
And the favorite restaurants and places there in the arcade were for you?
For the favorite place for me was, like I said, Smalley's Pretzel Company.
Right.
I loved that place.
Mine was Colts.
Yeah. You know what? I can remember that, but I never ate there. You know, we ate at home.
And everybody went to the fish market.
Yes, everybody. They fry your fish for you. Oh gosh.
That was good.
Great.
Yes, it was. Whiting, perch, whatever they had that you wanted, they would cook.
That store was so good that when they closed the arcade, they moved it over here somewhere.
Right, over on First Street.
Yeah, we did that deal.
So just one more. Why do you think that the arcade closed?
The stores began to close. You know, down, they start, they, what they did was they built malls in the suburbs and free parking. And there you go. Because you had to pay to park downtown, you had to park at a meter or park in a lot. There was no free parking. So you could take your family to the mall and park your car and get out and walk to all the same stores, basically, that were downtown. And that's what happened. You know, they deserted downtown. That broke my heart.
but I'm not going to tell a story. I don't even know how to ride a bus.
So, you told me you really liked the apartments when you were a little girl, and you wanted to live in them. Can you tell me why?
It just, they were fancy, and they had that little, you could look down onto the arcade, that little walkway. It was like a balcony, you know, and I used to say, because then you could look out into downtown, never knowing downtown would die, you know. Yeah, and the arcade, that broke my heart. You know, I'm telling you, if I had had money, I would have purchased that just to refurbish all of that, the ceiling, all of it. It was just gorgeous.
And then when you was coming from the west side in our area and get in that place down there, when you come down the hall and look up, it looks like the stuff we used to see in the Roman pictures. It's just sketches and arches and all the colors.
It was just gorgeous. It was gorgeous, you know.
All the woodwork on the ceilings and the carvings.
Yes.
And then in that balcony, oh my God.
You know, children, well, younger than me, even in their 50s, they don't know how to appreciate unless they were raised by parents like us. They don't know how to appreciate. You know, I appreciate the leaves in the spring, the blossoms that come. I appreciate all that, but my mother taught me that, you know, and I taught my children. It's something that if you don't become aware of it, you just pass right by it, you know.
And one last thing, I know I keep saying that, one last thing, how about the glass dome?
Oh, that's what I love. Gorgeous, just gorgeous. You know,
I got in that glass by going to around these churches down here, and I just love it. I love stained glass anywhere, and I like the way the arcade, the way it,
I like how
shapes.
You could come in one area, you could exit another. You could come in on 3rd and you could exit on 4th. You could go out on Main, but you would walk through McCroy's or whatever. Greens, I think there was a little five and dime named Greens.
That was another good place.
You have to forgive me. I don't remember a lot of things. Some things stick with me, but I lost my son in a house fire, and I taught school and couldn't.
I'm going to tell him he got to come along. I'm getting ready to go. So y'all can finish it.
Okay.
Yeah, I lost a lot of memory.
I'm sorry to
things
hear that, ma'am.
Just, and that was, when was that? 2004. So I see people, they talk to me, I don't even know who they are. But
well,
it's all right.
So, let's see here. Your parents were from Xenia.
My mom was.
Okay.
And my dad was from Paducah, Kentucky.
So, do you know where their parents were from?
My grandmother, Dayton.
Oh, on your father's side?
On my mother's side. Okay, my father's parents, Paducah, Kentucky.
Okay. Thank you very much.